Repeat after me. Yasatya Pasha Parivita Pitur Nidesham. Sainasya Chapi Sirasa Jagras Sabharya. Rajam Shriyam Pranayana Surado Nivasam. Jaktva Yayovanam Ashun Iva Mukta Sangha. Yasatya Pasha Parivita Pitur Nidesham. Svainasya Chapi Sirasa Jagras Sabharya. Rajyam Shriyam Pranayana Surado Nivasam. Jaktva Yayovanam Asun Iva Mukta Sangha. Yasatya Pasha Parivita Pidur Nidesham. Stainasya Chapi Sirasa Jagra Sabharya. Rajyam Shriyam Pranayana Surado Nivasam. Tyaktva Yayovanam Asun Iva Mukta Sangha. Yasatya Pasha Parivita Pidur Nidesham. Srainasya Chapi Sirasa Jagre Sabharya. Rajyam Shriyam Pranayana Surado Nivasam. Tyaktva Yayovanam Asun Iva Mukta Sangha. Yasatya Pasha Parivita Vidur Nidesham. Srainasya Chapi Sirasa Jagre Sabharya. Rajyam Shriyam Pranayana Surado Nivasam. Tyaktva Yayovanam Asun Iva Mukta Sangha. Yasatya Pasha Parivita Pidur Nidesham. Srainasya Chapi Sirasa Jagrahe Sabharya. Rajyam Shriyam Pranayana Surado Nivasam. Tyaktva Yayovanam Asun Iva Mukta Sangha. Matadis. Yasatya Pasha Parivita Pidur Nidesham. Srainasya Chapi Sirasa Jagrahe Sabharya. Rajyam Shriyam Pranayana Surado Nivasam. Tyaktva Yayovanam Asun Iva Mukta Sangha. Yasatya Pasha Parivita Pidur Nidesham. Sainasya Chapi Sirasa Jagrahe Sabharya. Rajyam Shriyam Pranayana Surado Nivasam. Tyaktva Yayovanam Asun Iva Mukta Sangha. Here, Lord Ramchandra, who? Satyapasha Parivita Pitu, of his father, who was bound by the promise to his wife. Nidesham, the order, Strainashya, of the father, who was very much attached to his wife. Cha, also, Api, indeed, Shirasa, on his head, Jagre, accepted, Sabharya, with his wife, Rajyam, the kingdom, Shiyam, opulence, Pranayana, relatives, Surada, friends, Nivasam, residence, Tektva, giving up, Yayo, went, Vanam, to the forest, Asun, life, Eva, like, Mukta Sangha, a liberated soul. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Carrying out the order of his father, who was bound by a promise to his wife, Lord Ramchandra left behind his kingdom, opulence, friends, well-wishers, residence and everything else, just as a liberated soul gives up his life and went to the forest with Sita. Purport. Maharaj Dasharath had three wives. One of them, Kaikeyi, served him very pleasingly, and he therefore wanted to give her a benediction. Kaikeyi, however, said that she would ask for the benediction when it was necessary. At the time of the coronation of Prince Ramchandra, Kaikeyi requested her husband to enthrone her son Bharat and send Ramchandra to the forest. Maharaj Dasharath, being bound by his promise, ordered Ramchandra to go to the forest according to the dictation of his beloved. And the Lord, as an obedient son, accepted the order immediately. He left everything without hesitation, just as a liberated soul or great yogi gives up his life without material attraction. Om Ajnan Timirandasya Jnanan Jana Shalakaya Chakshurun Malitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Deva Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschata Deshataya. So today, on the most auspicious occasion of Ram Navami, we will attempt to speak a little bit, some excerpts of Lord Ram's life. This will be like a trailer for the evening main show. This is Grace Radha Gopinath Prabhu will also speak. But it's always, as we have seen in the last few months, how Lord Ram has captured everyone's heart in India. I don't think anybody realized how much the impact he has in our lives. So we pray that that remains with us, not just momentarily, but ongoing, so that that becomes a lesson for how we live our lives also. So actually, the original text of the Ramayana itself explains how Ramayana came to be written. Valmiki was actually visited by Lord Brahma, who came and told him that, by divine arrangement, you will be able to write all the verses, and you have been chosen to relate the Ramayana. And he goes into meditation, and then he writes the 24,000 Sanskrit shlokas of the Lord of Ramayana. Now, Ramayana actually basically means the travels of Lord Ram. And the epicenter, of course, is Ayodhya, because that's where everything begins. And it is quite ironical of the name Ayodhya, because Ayodhya actually means victory personified. And Dashrath Maharaj, who ruled Ayodhya for 60,000 years, was a very glorious king. He ruled he brought so much peace, piety, prosperity. Everybody was very happy. It is described that Ayodhya had no fears, nobody spoke a lie, there was no hunger, there was all joy. Buildings had jewels, and parks and fountains and gardens, people were dancing. It was a very joyous occasion. There was love and trust, a lot of cooperation among all the varnas and the ashrams. So it was a kind of perfect setting. And yet the irony is that where we say there is victory personified, at the same time, Dashrath Maharaj experiences defeat towards the end in his life. So, as we will see, we just try to see some of the lessons that Ramayana teaches us. And this one lesson is that, a conditioned soul is always looking for success. You know, whatever we do, we want to be successful, we want to have victory, we want to defeat somebody, we want to achieve something. But ultimately, there is no, in the material world, there is no guarantee. There is no continuous success. We will find that we have to see it from the eyes of the Shastra and see what is real victory and defeat. Now, we know that how just a little bit of origin or the background was that Ravan was harassing and torturing practically the entire world. And all the demigods were terrified, so they go to the Lord and pray to him that please, you come and help us. And Lord Vishnu, he says that, I will come. And Ravan will be defeated and killed by when I come as Ram. And at the same time, he descends we know that how the fire sacrifice was made in Dashrath Maharaj's court, and he had three wives, principal wives, and then the payasam that came with the celestial being which came through, that was divided between the three wives, and one portion went to Kaushalya, one to Kaikeyi, and Sumitra got two portions from both the other wives. So three portions were shared into four, and Lakshman and Ram, Lakshman, Bharat and Shatrughna were born. Now it is described that actually the Golok Vrindavan has actually four sides, and as we have Vasudev, Shankarshan, Pradyumna and Anirudh. So they decide, they actually take the avatar simultaneously, they come, they descend, and Vasudev comes as Lord Ram, Shankarshan appears as Lakshman, Pradyumna appears as Bharat, and Anirudh appears as Shatrughna. And from the childhood, in fact from the time they were born, Shatrughna and Bharat were destined to serve. That was their reason to be. And right from the time they were born, whenever Lakshman would even cry, they just put him in the cot with Ram and he would be immediately quiet. And same with Shatrughna, when he was put in the cot next to Bharat, he would be very quiet. So, from the moments that they were born, it was very clear, and they were very happy doing that. So, if you now move to the time when the Lord is 16, I'm going to take just some parts. And when he's 16 and when Vishwamitra Muni comes, Vishwamitra Muni descends. Actually, Vishwamitra Muni is a very special soul, and he is usually always in the Himalayas. He hardly comes down. But he had come down to the plains to do some major fire sacrifice. And he rarely ever came to the cities. And therefore, his appearance in the court of Dashrath was extremely rare, very, very special. And here, Dashrath Maharaj actually reveals to us how a king really greets great souls. So, if we look at the Varnas, there's another lesson that we also learn from the Ramayana, that actually, of course, in right now, they don't really apply because we don't really have the real qualified Brahmins, the qualified Kshatriyas, etc. But in those days, in the Treta Yuga, when the Varnas and Ashrams were extremely well, not only well developed, but they acted very consistently along as per their Varnas and Ashram, the Kshatriyas have a tendency to control, administer the military also. So, that tendency to control would normally be manifest at least in one of the ashrams. But the principle in Ramayana is that more than the living to the according to their varnas, the higher principle is service to please the devotees. And that's what we see in the Ramayana. So, Dashrath Maharaj is one who, as a Kshatriya warrior, actually was very, very successful. For 60,000 years, he had built the empire and undisputed. But he shows us how one greets the great personalities, the sadhus. So, when Vishwamitra Muni came, he fell at his feet, he washed his feet, put him on the throne, and offered him the nicest prasad and all the best hospitality and service, was sitting at his feet, and he told him that whatever you want, I am your servant, I'll do anything you please, and anything that I can do, whatever is mine is yours, and whatever you tell me, I'm completely ready to do. So Vishwamitra Muni just tests him also and says that, is that a promise? He says, yes, it's a promise. And then, because he asked for Ram, he says, I'm doing this sacrifice in the kingdom, and these demons are coming and spoiling this sacrifice, so I need Ram to come with me. Now, actually, Vishwamitra Muni and the sadhus had enormous powers. They could have easily extinguished the demons immediately. But then that would not be the right mood for serving, and that would be completely inappropriate when they are sitting for the fire sacrifice. So, also to give the service to Kshatriyas. So, when he says this, that time Dashrath Maharaj, though he was very sincere in offering and said, I will do everything, my whole life is for you, my kingdom is for you, and he meant it, and he was always, but this demand had never ever come to him. And of course, Ram had just come 16 years before in his life, and that had completely changed. He was completely, for him, Lord Ram was his life and soul. He couldn't stay for even a moment without Ram. So he was totally devastated, to say the least. And he begs Vishwamitra Muni that please, anything else, I'll come myself. I'll bring a whole Lakshmini division. Ram is so small, he's so young, he's so delicate. And what will he do? But Vishwamitra Muni gets angry, and then Vasishtha prevails upon the king that, Lord Ram is the supreme personality of Godhead. Besides, Vishwamitra Muni is also there; he'll protect. So, and anyway, you cannot not comply with this. So he relents. Dashrath Maharaj relents, and so here also we see the principle that at the end of the day, sticking to their responsibilities and vows is finally supreme. And as we see in this verse today, however painful it is, they always stood by their vows. Then Vishwamitra Muni takes Lord Ram and Lakshman to the forest. And then they, many pastimes are there. Vishwamitra is very happy with them. He gives them, he blesses them with a lot of mantras and teaches them many special skills also. And then, of course, Ram, here also we see that Ram and Lakshman are so obedient, though he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is showing us that complete obedience to his Guru Maharaj, that whatever his Guru wants, he is always willing to listen and do. And only when instructed by them, when they came across finally, just at the fire sacrifice going on, at the Yajna, this Marich and his mother Tatka were there, and they were the biggest obstacles. And when Vishwamitra Muni instructs them, only then they do the needful and kill them. Well, he doesn't kill Marich, but Marich goes is pushed back some 800 yojanas. But then the fire sacrifice goes very peacefully. And then we know how he takes them to Mithila, and Vishwamitra Muni takes them. And there also, Ram and Lakshman are, they would not do anything without asking their guru. And the way Janak Maharaj also receives, just like how Dashrath Maharaj had done, Janak Maharaj is a Mahajan, also had great armies. But again, he demonstrates what real Kshatriya, they would not be called a Kshatriya if they did not, if they were not obedient, if they were not humble, and they did not do service to the real Brahmins. That was their motto. So, if you take an analogy, like compare it with in today's world, the reception of how a great sadhu is being done. During Prabhupada's time, when Giriraj Maharaj was in Mumbai, he used to go to all the offices and try to meet. Now, then that time, he has to meet the secretary. And the secretary will say, I will find out from my boss whether he has time or not. And then he would come back and say, no, not today, come some other time. And then again, they would go on and on. So there is a contrast to the reception that you get in Kali Yuga, and there where Janak Maharaj, who is such a powerful king, comes actually off the throne running and meets them. So these are lessons that we know, that when there is a genuine sadhu, what is our role, what is our position, and what we should do to really act. And then during the Swayamvar also, we know that Lord Ram then demonstrates that powerful bow which 5,000 men had to push hard and bring to the center very, very slowly. Just lifts it effortlessly. And it, of course, for the pleasure of all eternity, that Sitaji there at that time is also very worried, because she sees Lord Ram's tender arms and says, how is he going to lift the bow? How is he going to... Nobody has been able to do it, but he does. And then we see the complete the reunion back which of the eternal position. So now we come to where the role of today's verse, and we see some of the lessons that today's verse shows us when Lord Ram is banished. So the setting is that when after the marriage, when they came back to Ayodhya, and Dashrath Maharaj then can clearly see within a few years that Ram is more than fit to be the next king, and he should be coronated immediately, because Ram was loved by the citizens to such an extent that it was never seen before. The citizens, they had never seen such perfection in terms of the affection that he carried, the balance that he had, the care and consideration for all that everyone that he had, and the maturity, the tolerance. So he was a perfect prince, perfect potential king. So Dashrath Maharaj decides the day, and it was to be the most memorable day for everyone. All the citizens, every single citizen was looking forward to it. And then when Dashrath Maharaj gets, and Kaikeyi, we know how she was poisoned by the words of mantra. She changes, she then demands the two vows. Dashrath Maharaj is completely shattered, because he had not expected that it will be used in such a way. And he actually initially feels that this is just a joke, that it is she is not serious about it, or maybe because he knew that Kaikeyi loved Ram more than even her son Bharat. And Bharat also, and Ram also loved Kaikeyi as much as his mother. So it was incomprehensible to him that this actually was true. But finally, when it dawned on him that she is determined, you know, he faints, and he's then Lord Ram is brought in there. Now here we see how Ram demonstrates complete composure. He's very calm, and he listens, and he says that is fine. You know, I will comply with it. There's no difficulty. But when he's going back, he meets Lakshman on the way. Lakshman hears this, and he's extremely furious as per his nature, and you know, he's ready to fight the whole army of Dashrath Maharaj if he has to. But then Ram calms him down. Now when Ram comes to meet, he has to go first to meet his mother Kaushalya. So we see the different interplay of what the emotions are, what their thoughts are, but also how they, in spite of such grievance, in spite of such grief, they do not cross their, the minds are so pure. This is very rare to find, the hearts are so pure. This tragedy we cannot even comprehend in our lives because we have never seen any, even not even a drop of the kind of scale on which they are operating. But when it happens to us, you know, we are caught up with so many emotions, anything, so much negativity is there. So when he goes to Kaushalya, and for Kaushalya, this was her best day of the whole life. So waiting for it, and she had done so many pujas, and she was just waiting. And when Ram comes and tells her that, I've got some news which are going to be extremely painful for you. You'll have to. And then he tells her, okay, I'm going now for 14 years, and Bharat will be the king. She is completely grief-stricken. She said, you know, how many years I have been childless. And it was so painful for me. But that pain is nothing compared to when I now, you know, say, if you are going to go away from me even for a day, it will be impossible. So I will have to come with you. And then there's a very nice interaction, dialogue when Lord Ram tells her, okay, no, your duty is here to be with your husband because anyway, Kaikeyi has betrayed Dashrath Maharaj. And if you were to do this, she will not survive. He will not survive. So you have to be with her. You will have to be with him and support him. And Shastras also say that, you know, the wife gets all the benefits by just by serving her husband. So he gives her all the philosophical background and all. We see how the height of agony and ecstasy, both. We don't even come to those extremes, but here they're at the extreme because having Lord Ram as your son, there cannot be anything more ecstatic, and then having him depart so suddenly and again seemingly without any reason was completely devastating. So there was no limit to her grief. But then after Ram explains and says that however painful it is, it is written in, this is your duty. So then she says that I'll wait for you, and with a heavy heart she lets him go. We also see the lesson of how Lord Ram shows how critical it is to take blessings of the elders. After, obedient to his father, even to Kaikeyi also, he's very respectful, you know, even though he knows that what she's doing is wrong. But he has that respect. After hearing this, he comes and then the way he greets Kaushalya, his mother, he's taking blessings of all, and then he has to go to meet Sita. And here it is described that actually the grief which he was holding back is on his face. Not that he was grieving for himself, you know, he was completely at ease. But he could see from Sita's point of view, she's just a young bride, just come now into the kingdom. And how she's going to hear this, that now for 14 years I'm going to go away. So when he comes, as soon as he comes, and Sitaji is in a very delightful mood, because this again for her was, she was waiting for this for so many years, because she saw that how fit he was and how worthy he was. As much as she loved and respected him, she knew that every single citizen respected and loved him as much. And then, but the minute he enters the room, she immediately sees that there is so much grief on his face. So that was very puzzling initially and a bit frightening for her. And then, he tells her, okay, I have to, this is what happened. Now, this is very interesting, very wonderful lesson. Now, Sitaji, when he tells her that I am going, normally our reaction would be, how can it be? You know, why should it be? You know, what is wrong? You know, this is ridiculous. Who did this? I mean, it's so unfair. Because it was unfair. No? He was the most appropriate and most ideal, and everybody, you never find someone who gets full endorsement. There's no leader who can get an endorsement from everyone. Here, everybody wanted it. There can't be a single soul who didn't want, and they're looking forward to it. And here, she's just told overnight, she doesn't even think anything of that. That's not even in her mind. She's only looking at her duty. She says, I come with you, I have to come with you. And then he, of course, says, no, no, you are so young, you cannot come, you should do your duty here. You have to serve Dashrath Maharaj and Kaikeyi. Then he starts instructing her. that, you know, be nice with Bharat and Shatrughna, they are the rulers, you know, just be, like, be diplomatic, don't cross your link. All that she's, and she's incredulous, she's saying, why is he talking? So she says, no, I'm going to come with you. You have, then she gives the philosophy back to him, what he was telling his mother. Though she was not there that time, but she says that, you have only said that actually the highest duty of the wife is to serve the husband, and I will be most happy when I am with you. For me, when Ram describes all the hardships, he said, I understand, but you cannot understand what how difficult it is in the forest. You know, there are scorpions and snakes and alligators and, you know, very difficult. There's only, you know, there's no bedding, nothing, and we're talking of 14 years. And, you know, you have been brought up in such a way, my duty is to see that you remain in a palace. You have to be in that environment. So then she says that, no, I, for me, just the fact that I am so much in your heart and mind, that is enough for me. I don't need anything else. If I am put in this forest also, it will be the most, I'll feel as if I am in my father's home. For me to be away from you will be the worst thing. I will not be able to live, I'll have to take poison, I will not be there. So she also, you know, gives him the ultimatum in a way. And, you know, so she argues very forcefully and then Ram agrees. Of course, this was again to show us how such a calamity is being seen by both Ram and Sita. There's no criticism. She doesn't criticize anyone. She doesn't mourn. She doesn't groan. She doesn't say, you know, how can this one say this, that. This is typical for us. You know, we would immediately say, and perhaps we may be justified, we may feel, because especially when there is a completely causeless anguish done. But here, there is not even, she's, even after when she hears everything about who said what, you know, how Mantra's role was there, Kaikeyi's role was there, there is no mention at all in her mind. This is the kind of caliber that we see the heights of what Sitaji was. That was an instant reaction. So Lord Ram said, okay, then you can go and, you know, give all your belongings to the Brahmins and then, you know, we can go together, come back. Then he meets Lakshman and then Lakshman again is all fury and fire. But then eventually when he sees Ram is going, he said, I have to come with you. I cannot live without you. And interestingly, Ram doesn't even get into an argument. Ram knew from the beginning that his life is only, he's my shadow and he will be there. So there is hardly two lines or three lines in Valmiki Ramayana. And he says, you know, he tells Lakshman, fine, you come with me. There's no problem. And that's amazing. In all the cases in Lord in Lakshman's case, he just accepts it because he knew that this is, you know, this is destined to me. Lakshman's life, he was a shadow of Lord Ram. Then, but the very interesting the roles that we see and the reactions, though they are not in the forefront, one is of Sumitra. Now here her son, again we can say that though she was very devoted to her co-wives and to her husband and to all the family, everything. But when it comes to like this, it would be natural for her to react and say that, but what has Lakshman done? No, what has my son done? He has nothing to do with it. No, why he has to go to the forest? At least the thought would have come because she had loved Lakshman more than her life. But immediately when Lakshman came and clasped her feet and, you know, wanted to take her blessings, that I will need to go to the, I'm going to, with Ram. That is straight, he comes and straight tells her. So she is weeping with joy and she tells him that, she kisses his head, you know, and also and tells him that from now on, you know, Ram is your father. You please serve him like you serve Dashrath Maharaj and Sita is my, in my place, Sita is your mother. And Ayodhya is, means the forest is Ayodhya. And just make sure that you fully take care of them. That is an instant reaction of Sumitra, showing how much they the selflessness and the devotion they have for the principles. And then we also see Urmila, whose role is not mentioned, but fleetingly mentioned, but Lakshman's wife. And just spare a thought in her position that she's in one sense. She's just absolutely, she is left without a husband for 14 years. But Lakshman had so much faith in her. He knew that she could totally depend on her, that she had, that, you know, that she very happily, it was not a question of that she had to resign and take it. Ultimately, we will say what role she had to play. I mean, she had to accept it. That is not the way. It is really the consciousness and the spirit in which they take it. Here, the devotion to the Lord is shown by the consciousness and the spirit in which all are performing their roles. They embrace the challenges and they do not criticize. They are not looking for any reasons, excuses, anger, indignation, nothing. And Urmila could be forgiven to have any some thought, because from all the cases, you know, hers was, you know, her, it's not even her husband. It is a brother who, I mean, her husband is just a brother. So in our world, we would say, "Arey, bhai ko kyun bhejte ho? You know, why he has to go? You know, I mean, at least he can stay here." There's not even a thought. And she was also completely, she knew that her, she can give her full love and devotion to her husband by pleasing him and by staying in Ayodhya and the way he wanted. And he knew that he could depend on her. So we learn so many lessons. And then of course the citizens, when they, when the chariot was going out with Sumantra, was taking them, three of them away, they couldn't hardly move because they completely blocked the road. And they were wailing and crying so despairingly because it was shattering for them, because they were so expectant of this joyful day, and they could really feel that this is so. They said, "No, you cannot go, and take us with you. You know, we will make let us create Ayodhya will be in the forest, and the forest will become Ayodhya. You know, when we go to the forest, let that be Ayodhya, and let Kaikeyi, evil-minded Kaikeyi, stay here and let this Ayodhya become a forest, etc." They were extremely upset. And then they were running behind the chariot. For miles and miles they ran till they could. They were wailing. And for it was as if they had lost their sons, more than their sons, because they loved Ram more than their son, because Ram is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and coming in their lives. And these are all pure devotees. So, this is when then the Lord moves, or we move to the in the forest. Ram and Lakshman kill many demons. They satisfy the sages. Then Surpankha's role comes in. She provokes Ravan after her nose is cut off, and she taunts her brother, and then Marich is forced to take this role of a deer, golden deer, to entice Ram away into the forest. So at that time, Marich also, in spite of being a demon, but because he had been spared, you know, he was not killed when Ram and Lakshman at the age of 16 had gone to the forest. But he remembered. So when he heard from Ravan, so he tries to his best to say, he was horrified when he heard, "Are you telling me to take the wife of, to do this, and you're going to take Ram's wife?" He thinks that Ravan doesn't understand. He says, "You don't know what you're talking about. You have no idea who Ram is." You know, I mean, first he describes his power, that is one arrow shot was 800 yojanas, and one yojana is, I think, maybe more than 100 miles, so 80,000 miles, one arrow. And secondly, then he describes the glories of his character. Imagine Marich is telling Ravan that he's such a great king, he spared me, and you must be out of your mind. But then Ravan was really getting angry, and when Marich knew that either I'll be killed by Ravan or by Ram, so better I die. I am now going to die anyway, so let me take the better option. So he plays his role, and Ravan kidnaps Sita. At this stage, we look at now how the theme of Ramayana, one of the key themes is how the Lord loves his devotees, how the devotees love Ram, and then the reciprocation. The reciprocation between the Lord and his devotees, it is at every stage. So these are the lessons for us, that how the Lord reciprocates. And there are so many instances in our contemporary times, devotees who have not been active, and then Prabhupada's the disciples, some of them, they for 20, 30 years, they have no connection. They've just gone off the track. But then at the last moments, the Krishna brings them back to out of his kindness. Lots of, we have seen this, the reciprocation of the Lord, if you have taken to his service. So what to speak of those who completely surrender? So one of these we see in the life of Jatayu. Jatayu was a vulture who was a very close friend of Dashrath Maharaj. So he was the king of the vultures, and he also was very old, because obviously he was also almost 60,000 years. So when Ravan was abducting Sitaji and flying off in that magical chariot driven by donkeys, so Sitaji sees Jatayu dozing off on the branch of a tree. So then she calls out to him, but she calls out only, and she tells him that, look, Ravan is taking me. Just go and tell Ram who's taken me and which direction I'm going. She also tells him, don't fight, because you can't fight. There was no contest, because here's an old bird, and here is one, Ravan's someone who had terrified all the demigods and defeated them also. But Jatayu, being such a pure devotee, he could not tolerate that anyone could do this, in front of his eyes. So in spite of Sitaji telling him, you just go, that, it's a no contest, don't even bother to fight. But he actually really, springs to action. And of course he's a king, and he was very powerful in his time. But, as we say in a colloquial English, that somebody can punch way above his weight. I mean, in boxing, you have different weights, and you are supposed to fight as per your weight, because you just can't do, a 50 kilo guy can't fight an 80 kilo person. But it's rare, you won't find that. So here we see that Jatayu's level was much lower at that time. We're talking of, and Ravan was many, many, many times stronger than him. But he, the power of his perfection, power of his purity, he springs to action, and then he challenges Ravan, says, you cannot take it, you're so angry. And he really fights, and the way he fights, initially, if Ravan didn't have his mystical powers, he would have been in greater trouble. So with his beak, Jatayu knocks or kills all the horses, the donkeys. Then he also, the charioteer, he destroys the chariot, his bows, all the Ravan's 10 arms which were holding Sitaji were also destroyed. But then new arms came back. So this went on and on, but then Ravan, because of his mystical powers, Jatayu was getting tired and tired, how much could he fight? And then finally when Ravan just takes his sword and chops off his wings. And then Jatayu, the big, huge, giant vulture, falls to the ground, bleeding. Now the reciprocation of the Lord is that, here he is in such pain externally, and a very ghastly, messy situation where blood is pouring out, and he's no wings, just a mass of flesh. And Sitaji actually goes and embraces him. That Valmiki Ramayana says that she embraces him, cries, and where will you find Sitaji cry for a devotee? What is his glory that he had Mother Sita come and cry for her and for him? And she said that. And she cries out to Ram that, see your devotee, what he has done. What he has done for me. He's given, this is for my life. For me, he's done this. But then Ravan takes her away. And then when Ram and Lakshman come, first Ram thinks that actually this must be the beast who must have actually eaten Sitaji. See, for a moment he mistakes that. But then when Jatayu is still alive, he's alive only to give the message to Lord Ram. And then when he speaks and tells, this was what happened. He narrates the situation, says that how the Ravan came and I tried my best, but I'm very old, I couldn't do it. He has taken her away. And then he dies. And then Ram is so, he weeps, and some of those, what he speaks to Lakshman is really amazing, because he tells him that, when he takes Jatayu's head on his lap, and he says that what I could not do for my father, I could not do the cremation, I will do for Jatayu. He does that. He didn't do for Dashrath, but he could do for Jatayu. I mean, the last rites were performed by Ram. And he also said that day, at that time, just before he lights the fire, he said that, Jatayu, hear this, this is my promise, that right now, instantly, you will be going back to Vaikuntha forever in my eternal kingdom. So, Jatayu was not expecting that. Jatayu was not expecting that this is what the Lord will do and therefore I should do it. It was not a chess game that I'll make these moves and the Lord will make these moves. He was doing it entirely on his own. And see, the amazing part is that when we normally have a challenge in our hands, there's always at least 1, 2, 3% of success. Nobody can predict who can, the miracles can happen. Here there was zero chance. He knew that there was zero chance, but he was fully, instantly, immediately ready to sacrifice his life for his devotional service. That is why we glorify for the pages of eternity, sacrifice of Jatayu. And we learn from that that what Prabhupada tells us in the, through this, the lessons that we learn is that we should never get discouraged. We may have impossible odds also against us. But in the case of Jatayu, he had no association that time. He had earlier association. When he was right, all alone at that age. Dashrath also had left, and he had, in spite of that, he had that such strong conviction. Well, in our cases, we would always have the opportunity for association to remind us, to help us in the most difficult times. So we should not be despondent. There's nothing worse that can happen because we still have the holy name. We still have guidance. We can still have, and ultimately this is the body. So the discouragement that we sometimes face and we go to the lowest levels of our thinking need not be there. That is one of the lessons that come to us. And same thing we see in Vibhishan's case also, when the reciprocation and Vibhishan. Now, if we think our position is very difficult, you know, my neighbors are bad, maybe my father doesn't like me or this or that, I don't think we can compare with Vibhishan, because first of all, his brother Ravan is, we know what kind of a strength and position he had and the power that he had. And Vibhishan was also born in the Ravan, in the demoniac, you know, lineage by birth. Just like Prahlad Maharaj, Bali Maharaj, that was their birthright. In spite of that, the kind of, forget about association. I mean, he had absolutely nobody to give the slightest guidance, because everybody was hostile towards anything good, anything righteous, anything dharmic. So there was no question. In spite of that, all these years he tolerated, and then he had the courage to come and speak out. He could have been killed. He was expecting that. But somehow, Ravan was told that, you know, it would be bad publicity if you were to kill your brother, because so then he was thrown out. He comes to Lord Ram. There also, everybody except Hanuman first, when Ram tests everyone, and everybody is kind of negative about it, because naturally they think that whatever it is, you know, he's come, he may have come, but he's come as a spy and the war is going to start. So he is now from the other camp. What is his motives? Sugriv, very vociferous, and said, absolutely not, don't even take him. But Hanumanji had seen, and he vouches for him and tells Ram that I've seen how in the court, because actually Hanumanji also would have been killed when he allows himself to be tied and taken to the court. But Vibhishan stops Ram and says that he's come as a messenger, and again it will be very bad for how it will look. So he stops him. So Hanumanji knew that he was a very devoted person to be able to understand these principles. So in the case of Vibhishan also, we see how the Lord makes it so difficult, you know, his birth, his environment, his upbringing, everything, you know, he's right in the middle, and that too, he's in a very leadership position. It's not as if he's just one of the citizens who can quietly go away. But still, he takes the plunge, he comes out, and with three or four of his ministers, he moves. And then see the reciprocation. The Lord not only embraces and takes him, he not only makes him the king of Lanka afterwards, but he also makes him his confidant and brings him closest to him. So we have to understand at the end of the day what is most valuable for us. You know, I mean, our body is temporary, and all the issues related to our body, or the eternal relationship that we have with the Lord. Between the two, we have to judge what is most important for us at all times. So every step, every day, every moment, you know, we have choices to make. So the choice that we generally make is, we should make is that the purpose of our process of sadhana bhakti is really that our consciousness is such that when we are really pushed in the difficult times, at least the questions come that, how will devotees react, or how will my Guru Maharaj react? And we think before we take a decision. And if we are able to consult, we can consult. So the situation is not the issue in front of us. Our reaction is the issue. The situations are created by the Lord. I mean, he's there in everyone's heart. We know that. So obviously, if somebody is opposing us or creating a situation, Krishna is in the heart and is allowing that. Krishna is watching it, is allowing only to see how we react in those situations. So our reactions will be based on whatever we have sincerely followed through the process. So if we just mechanically do it, you know, to tick a box that, okay, I've kept a fast for Ram Navami, or I've chanted my rounds, or I've read this, I've covered this, I've done this course, and that is good. But that the real meaning is that we combine it into our life. And when it comes to our life, you can't disassociate that. When it comes to our life, we put it into practice to the extent we can. And accepting that these challenges are there, because ultimately we keep hearing in a shastra that Dukhalaya Mashashvatam, this is a place of misery, we have to get out. So if we get too attached, if we get too comfortable, then Krishna will provide kindly situations where to remind us that we can't become so comfortable. And believe me, there are many times we feel we are so comfortable because everything is going nice. Even temporarily we may feel those situations. But then we are also moved into other situations when we are really challenged. But those also will not last. So like the seasons change, it up and down will go on. But our consistency and steadiness is what Krishna wants to see. So these are some of the lessons of that Lord Ram showed us. And I think more of it we will hear in the evening. So Hare Krishna. Yeah, we have we have a couple of minutes for questions in case there are any. Yeah, mic.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Bol Prabhu. Hare Bol. Prabhuji, Lord Ram has such a divine qualities, like, you know, everyone loves Lord Ram. So how did mantra convinced, like, poison the mind of, you know, how to understand this, like, how did she poison the mind of, like?
Actually, Kaikeyi also, we know how much she loved Lord Ram. And in spite of that, so this is actually the Leela of the Lord. I mean, there is pastimes here that how we should act in restraint. So these are situations that are created to show how, like even someone like Kaikeyi, who was so much genuinely loved Ram, and they had such love in the family. But, if we are in bad association, how we can be swayed, how our minds can be swayed. So there may be some link in the past about mantra, which I am not aware of, the mantra's past life. But in this episode, I think the like how the dhobi has a role to play later on. Similarly, mantra's role, seemingly evil and envious. But for us, the lessons are that how even though Kaikeyi was such a protected position, very close to, she was the most favorite queen of Dashrath, and everything was there, wonderful sons, wonderful, everybody loved her, and, but, you know, she allowed herself to be poisoned. So I think that really is the lasting thing for us, that how, in spite of such an environment, Kaikeyi could completely change. So what to speak of us, that we have so many distractions and negativity, and you know, if we are whatever we are doing, our Krishna consciousness effort is very, very tentative, very tenuous, you know, very insecure at the moment. It's a struggle. So we have to be very careful, very protective, and that's why the steadiness and consistency is needed. So that's what we really learn from that. This is one. Last question.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Thank you for sharing the wonderful pastimes of Lord Ramchandra. Prabhuji, I had one question. Like you mentioned about Jatayu, how he had a situation in which the chances of success was very less.
Zero.
Zero. And then also he acted. So, Prabhuji, similarly, like in our lives also, we have some situations. So, so we have to decide whether to go for it when there is no seemingly chance. In the name of the Lord, we should go for it, or we should take the safe side and act as the most, what most of the people do. So how we should decide to go for it?
See, in Jatayu's example, story is really to tell us that the definition of success and failure, you know, because we are conditioned to think that if I materially succeed, I am successful. So once His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj had given a class, many times we've spoken about it, but I remember him once saying that, who is a greater devotee? Is it Arjun or Jatayu? Because Arjun won the war and Jatayu lost. Materially he was a failure, you know. He couldn't do anything. But we can see that actually both were glorious. So first of all, we see success and failure from that point of view. So externally, we may have a setback, we may be failures, we may have started something, we may have lost a job, it's a question of how our actions are. So, you know, it's more a matter of our reaction to events. So therefore, your specific issues I would not be able to comment on when we take a decision. But what we should be guided by is we should be careful as to what is our thinking. Now, if it is a occupational issue, we look at the philosophy, but we also need to do what we need to do. It's not that then I would just throw up my hands and become philosophical when I need to act. Like Arjun, he heard the philosophy, but then he wasn't thinking of the philosophy on the day 1, day 2 and day 18. He was fully focused on remembering his mantras and shooting and fully, completely occupied into doing the best, which actually meant killing. Externally was killing. So in our occupation, we have to give the best, but that is subordinate to the higher principle of how we act. So we don't hurt anyone, we don't criticize anyone as we do our best. In our workplace also, we are as ethical as we can be. Those things we must do. But we can't be not competitive, let's say, if we are in a situation, if you are in a sales department. So those things are subordinate. So I don't want to do mistake occupational needs. But there also we do in a certain way, because there are so many ways of doing malpractices. But we do it in the most ethical way, but we put our heart and soul in intensity. But the largest principle for governing our life, because ultimately occupation is one part of our life, no? It may be for the 30, 40 years in the middle, you know, then we still have so many years, and then it's also only some hours in a day. So how we behave with our family, with our devotees, with our neighbors, with our parents, relatives, non-devotees, the whole world. So those things and the decisions we take should be guided by that. So one thing, the setback and failure, it should not put us back, just because sometimes the worst problem is when we have a setback, we actually get very pessimistic and psychologically affected. So if you see it in the right, so in fact it's a very positive, the shastras are very positive, that we have a challenge and we actually lose. We may be humiliated also. Somebody might tell us, you are a failure, you haven't done, somebody else could do it. But if we don't let it affect us and we do our best, because if we made mistakes or if we made, then we learn from the experience. Everybody has made mistakes. So attitude and values are shaped by our scriptures, and we can apply it also in our occupation and in our general behavior. So there has to be a consistency in how we react to events. That's what I can say generally. Okay. Hare Krishna. So all glories to Sri Ram. All glories to Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Thank you.